Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Scottsdale, Arizona, Friday, May 19. Orion Samuelson reporting in from Arizona. Max Armstrong will be joining us a little bit later from wherever he is in the country as his travels as president of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting keeps him on the road almost every day during his year-long term as president. But we'll be covering markets. As a matter of fact, today we'll introduce for the first time another market reporter. And I want to mention the fact that Mark Feit, who is with the International Agribusiness Group, headquartered in Michigan, will be joining Max a little bit later to talk markets and particularly weather and the impact the weather is having on the crop situation. One of the major impacts is trying to decide by farmers if they should replant or not replant. And they're carefully analyzing what kind of water damage they have suffered so far, because with the price of seed corn today, you don't want to have to replant if you can possibly avoid it. So I heard of one Illinois farmer who was facing the prospect of having to replant 900 acres of corn. So let's go from weather and corn to the stock market. What a week of turmoil it was, and most of it because of the goings-on in Washington with the Trump campaign and the Russians and whatever else we can talk about. So the stock market today did move higher, but it closed below the session highs on renewed concerns about what's going on in Washington after two new reports related to a federal investigation into possible coordination between Russia and Trump's election campaign. Again, the Washington Post and the New York Times leading the coverage of the stories on the Trump-Russia situation. Now, all of the 11 major S&P industry sectors ended the day higher. Industrials showing the biggest percentage gain with a 1.3% increase, while the energy sector was up 1.25%. Oil company shares were boosted by a 2% increase in oil futures related to growing expectations that OPEC and other producing countries will agree at a meeting next week to extend crude output cuts. Software developer Autodesk jumped 14.7% and was the biggest percentage gainer on the S&P after reporting better than expected quarterly revenue. But to me, the big surprise in the earnings reports that came out today, Deere and Company. And Deere and Company's not only surprised me, but surprised the market as well. Let me cover that Deere earnings report in some detail. It raised its full-year sales and profit forecast for the second time, thanks to improved demand for its farm and construction equipment, particularly in South America. And that sent Deere stock to a record high of $122.22. The company said it expected fiscal 2017 industry sales of tractors and combines in South America to be at the high end of its earlier forecast of an increase of about 15% to 20%, thanks to improving economic conditions in Brazil and Argentina. And while farmers in South America have been complaining about low prices, they have enjoyed big gains in corn and soybean output. Brazil just completed a record large soybean harvest of 111.6 million tons, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And a 7% drop in the Brazilian currency on Thursday also encouraged farmers to sell soybeans as their supplies turn more affordable than exports from the United States. But net income attributable to Deere rose 62% to $802.4 million, or $2.49 per share. Total sales and revenue up 5.2%. And why was this a surprise? Well, when you look at corn and soybean and wheat prices, all crops that are planted and harvested by Deere equipment, and we see what farmers are not making on some of those crops, it was a surprise to see it happen. But it happened in South America, and then the third largest market for Deere & Company is in Latin America. So what do we watch next week? Well, maybe we won't see quite as much coming out of Washington next week, because today President Donald Trump left on his first foreign trip since being elected to the White House. And so we'll see if that trip will take some of the attention away from the domestic controversies and turn them maybe to more international controversies. So looking ahead to next week, on Thursday, oil ministers from OPEC and non-OPEC nations will gather for a policy meeting, and there they will decide whether to extend their deal to reduce crude output beyond June 30th. OPEC, Russia, and other producers originally agreed to cut production by 1.8 million barrels per day for 6 months from January 1st to support the market. President Donald Trump will propose $200 billion in infrastructure spending over 10 years in his first budget on Tuesday, and the administration believes the funding will boost private, state, and local spending on projects. Friday will bring the second reading of U.S. gross domestic product in the first quarter, and it's expected to be revised upwards by 0.9% from a preliminary estimate of annual growth of 0.7%. And on the same day, Friday, the Commerce Department will release data on April durable goods, likely to have dropped 1.2%. The University of Michigan Surveys of Consumers releases its final May Consumer Sentiment Index on the same day. Separately, next week we'll get new home sales for the month of April. Sales expected to show a slight decline compared to the increase that we saw last month. And on Wednesday, April's existing home sales are likely to fall 5.65 million units, down slightly from the March number. In Washington next week, the Federal Open Market Committee will release the minutes from its May policy meeting on Wednesday. And meanwhile, a host of Federal Reserve presidents, regional presidents, are scheduled to speak at events all across the country. The heads of G7 nations will begin a two-day summit at Taormina, Sicily, in Italy, on Friday, and the White House has said that President Donald Trump will decide whether to quit the global Paris Agreement on climate change, a campaign promise, after he talks to other international leaders. Now, the earnings reports. Costco Wholesale Corporation expected to have had strong sales in its third quarter, helped by higher adoption of its new Visa credit card, which offers more benefits than its previous American Express card. Medical device maker Medtronic will report fourth quarter earnings on Thursday. The Dublin-based company, likely to have benefited from higher demand for its heart, vascular, and minimally invasive products. And if you're like me and have a pacemaker, you have a Medtronic product. Computer and printer maker HP is expected to report a rise in second quarter revenue on Wednesday, having benefited from a stabilizing personal computer market and looking for its third consecutive quarter of revenue growth. Lowe's Companies, the number two U.S. home improvement retailer, has forecast strong sales for 2017, helped by a robust housing market that has encouraged Americans to spruce up their homes or buy new ones. And the company's first quarter earnings will be out Wednesday. Luxury retailer Tiffany & Company reports first quarter results. Luxury home builder Toll Brothers will give us an idea on the health of the luxury home industry. They'll be reporting on Tuesday, and it's expected to be an increase. So we continue to roll out some important earnings reports, and they will be watched carefully next week. Okay, I promised that we'd have a new market reporter join us, and he's standing by in the studio with Max Armstrong. So we'll get his comments on the weather and crops when we continue on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
As we talk about the markets this weekend, we're joined by Mark Feit. First time we've had the opportunity to visit Mark. It's nice to have you here from International Agribusiness Group, managing director there. We're watching the continued planting of the corn crop, and the weekly crop bulletins, the last one showed us, were just right on par with the average and not behind a year ago. And many farmers would say, wait a minute, there's more to the story. Is there any concern at all about all of the replant that has had to be done here? And maybe not taking fully into account the damage on that crop that has been planted?
Yeah, Max, I think there is a reason to be concerned. We're always concerned about, once we get into the growing season, about how the crop's progressing. But most of the struggle and most of the challenge has been in Illinois and east. So you're talking about probably 20 to 25% of the crop that's been adversely affected. We think Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota are off to a pretty good start. By the time we get the report on Monday, we think we're still at five-year average planting progress. That would be 84% corn and 51% on the soybeans. So we should be at that; those levels are better. So I think it's going to be hard for the market to find a reason to really want to buy this market today based on delays or planting problems.
I pressed a friend on that the other day who was still planting corn, and I said, how much have you shaved the yield potential, do you feel, from your earlier planted corn? He said he really wasn't too concerned about it, given the fact that it is warmer, it has warmed up in his area. He felt that corn would come right along. Apparently, the market seems to feel the same way.
I think that's right. If you go outside of areas other than Illinois, I think people I talk to in Illinois think they have shaved a little bit off, but maybe it's 5 to 10%. Stands are not ideal or not where they want to be. And some replanting, certainly with later planting, would take some yield off. But the rest of the crop, I think, offsets it. So I don't think you want to take away the chance of a record yield. Maybe you lower the odds of a record yield today, but the opportunity is still there.
The opportunity is still there. Minnesota dramatically jumped ahead in planting of their corn crop. It was really remarkable, wasn't it, to see how far behind they were and how much they caught up in 1 week.
Yeah, they really came back. I don't think they slept last week. They must have been 24-7, but that's what they do. And they understand they've only got a narrow window. They've only got a limited number of days to plant, and when conditions get right, it's amazing what we can do in a few days.
Did any significant acreage get shifted from corn to beans in your mind?
Well, I think if we go back to March, we felt like the USDA did not have enough prevented plant factored into their acreage numbers. And their acreage numbers, if you look at total corn, soybeans, wheat, cotton, were too high. And we felt even with a normal year, factor in normal prevented plant, that we'd see a decrease in one of those four, maybe a couple of them, even with a normal planting. So I think we've probably moved maybe close to 1 million acres of corn toward soybeans. But I think overall we've lost some acres, maybe as much as 2.5 million acres off the total.
In your mind, how is the soybean crop getting started here in the plantings? From what you're hearing?
Well, I think we're off to a pretty good start. There's a few places where it's a little late, and maybe you would want to talk about lower yields. But overall, this crop, I think, is getting off to a really good start.
When then will we start to really focus in on weather again? I mean, are we going to have to go through a few weeks here before the market is really going to be responsive to any kind of significant weather development?
Well, the direct impact of weather today is really more outside of the U.S. We're watching the safrina crop finish in South America. We think that's shrunk maybe a little bit, not getting bigger at this point. The other item that we're keeping a close eye on is China. They've been on the dry side. That's not unusual, but the forecast has them warm and dry for the next few weeks and not much relief. So we're going to have to watch that. It's not a problem today, but it's something to certainly keep your eye on. U.S. And the June, middle of July.
That's what I thought you would say as we get toward those critical days for the corn crop. Before we stop talking about domestic crops, so let's just visit about wheat for just a moment on this dramatically lower acreage with all of the problems reported from Kansas, even though the crop is not significant. Are we still yet to see more of those acres not combined or just written off or maybe planted to some other crop? I mean, is the abandonment going to be even greater than perhaps we've been thinking to this point?
Yes, I absolutely agree. In our balance sheets, the IAG balance sheets, we've taken harvested acres on wheat down. We're below the USDA on yield. We think the rust issue in Kansas continues to get worse. The forecast certainly looks like we continue to support rust issues. I think that creates a yield issue that does show up in KC futures. On the soft red, quality issues in the rain probably have a hard time showing up in futures.
Even with rains dumped into southern Indiana, parts of southern Illinois, Missouri is in the, at least if you look at the forecast for parts of Missouri, they're going to get pounded again with some heavy rain.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that we're probably going to fill in some holes in the wheat anyway, fill in holes that we've probably already killed, so we can't kill it twice. I think it's going to be minimal on the soft red. We've probably done most of the damage we can do. We're going to have to watch the rain over the next few weeks to see if that, from a quality standpoint, whether we're going to impact that crop. But quality in the soft red, I think, ends up being a basis issue more than a board of trade issue.
Currency values, my goodness, those have come to loom large here this week as we look at what has been happening in South America. The bottom line is, with all that is taking place down there, with the reported scandal and the fluctuation of the currency, there's an opportunity for that South American farmer to sell into the world market now, correct?
Absolutely.
And it discourages him from holding.
It does. It gives him a huge rally today to sell beans, and we've seen it. We think they've sold 3 to 4 weeks worth of soybeans over the last 24 hours. It really is a presidential dip where we've seen issues in the U.S. and in Washington and in South America in politics, and it's certainly gives them an opportunity to sell, and they're doing it. So it's we can see what it's done to the Chicago markets. Usually these issues come and go pretty quickly.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, as we look at history, I mean, the fluctuations of the currency, that pendulum can swing back rather quickly sometimes, it seems.
It does. I think outside of Europe and the U.S., most countries would look at this issue with Brazil and say, so what? This is the way we do business. So it market adjusts for that pretty quickly.
We probably should have visited about this at the outset. Who is International Agribusiness Group?
We are a consulting group that works with people throughout the food chain and on Wall Street to help them manage price risk in ag commodities. We provide fundamental analysis and marketing risk management strategies for anybody that's exposed or has commodity risk.
What about producers? Do you work with farmers themselves?
Absolutely. That's where we started 35 years ago, and that's still an integral part of our businesses. And today, those are the people that have the pain. The sell side of this market is much more challenged than the buy side today.
Well, it is a critical time, and there are so many aspects to managing the risk. Obviously, the whole portfolio has to include crop insurance along with the marketing of the crop.
Absolutely. We certainly encourage as risk managers that the crop insurance, as cheap as that is, it's a no-brainer. We put that on, and we work with customers in integrating our strategies in with their crop insurance. But we tend to, our strategies usually have a plan B. So if we're wrong, which we know in this business we're always going to be, we're going to have something to lean against if the market goes against our position.
Are there some common mistakes that a grower will make? And you know, when you and I started talking here, you hearkened back to when you started in this business in 1988, and I tend to think of those other drought years, if you will, and other very wet years. And we try to, I think, sometimes in our mind draw analogous comparisons with what's gone on before this. But are there common things that have happened that you've seen in your business over the years where farmers tend to make mistakes, where we should learn from those errors of the past?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. We tend to let our decision-making process be impacted by those big years that only happen once every 10 years, once every 5 years. And it's what happens in between those years that really makes a difference. And the biggest mistake that I see farmers making is not making a decision, putting that decision off another day and not having a plan, not having someone or something to push them into making a decision.
We see that often, don't we? And then it becomes a matter of, oh, yes, I sure wish I would have done this.
Yeah. I think the farmer's intuition is really good. It's usually strong. If they would just listen to the voice in their head and make those decisions, or maybe it's their wife's voice or their spouse's voice sometimes, that would help. But it's for whatever reason, the voice in the head never gets to execution.
Do you work with several farm women who are marketers, and don't they tend to be a little more a little more shrewd, or perhaps I should say prudent?
Yeah, and I hate to be sexist here, but we look at data, and our data tells us that they are less emotional about that decision, and it's about the money. And not about what I've put into that crop, and maybe it's a little less ego.
Mark, it's a treat to talk to you. Thanks for coming in to join us from International Agribusiness Group.
Thanks, Max. Been a pleasure.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Well, let's continue with more coverage of the world of agriculture and agribusiness. An announcement this week coming from a source at the White House. As a matter of fact, today, Friday, President Trump's administration announced plans for deep cuts to state environmental programs, a summary of the Environmental Protection Agency's 2018 budget revealed today, even after some Republicans in affected states raised concerns about the agency released an initial outline of the budget in March. But the EPA's grants to state and local governments on pollution issues ranging from air quality management to pesticide enforcement would be cut 45% to $597 million in the fiscal year the budget being proposed the administration will send to Congress this week. This according to details released by the National Association of Clean Air Agencies. There has never been a strong love affair between farmers and ranchers and the EPA, who think that they are totally overreaching their hand with some of the rules and regulations that they have put in place. And so it's going to be interesting to see how this one comes out, because several Republicans, including Senator Rob Portman of Ohio and Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, had raised concerns about the EPA's plans to cut Great Lakes program funding. But it'll be generating a lot of controversy, I'm sure, because the EPA has strong supporters. Looking at the grain markets as we ended the week, corn hit a one-week high. Again, U.S. weather worries playing a major role in that. Soybeans firmed following yesterday's 3% sell-off as Brazil's currency stabilized. And so looking at where we'll start the trade on Tuesday, keep in mind it's a four-day trading week next week, Tuesday through Saturday, and so we'll be watching those markets carefully. July wheat ended today up 10.5 cents at 4.35 1/4. July corn up 6 3/4 for the day, ending the week at 3.72 1/2. And I should correct myself, because Memorial Day shutdown on Wall Street and the grain market will come a week from Monday on the 29th in observance of Memorial Day. The soybean market today, July, ended with a gain of 8.5 cents at $9.53 a bushel. Now, when it comes to livestock, I'd like to quote this day, Friday, the end of the week, the information sent out by a gentleman who I follow every day in the livestock market. Dennis Smith with Archer Financial Services puts out a daily evening newsletter. And here's what he had to say about the lean hog market today at the Mercantile Exchange. He said early talk was that cash was lower, mostly down on a Friday. But lean hog futures traded mixed in the early action and then began to move higher, with the July outperforming all other contracts. And he said late in the session, the buying kept pouring in, with fresh contract highs posted in the July lean hogs. And he said all settlements were near their session highs for an impressive display of bullishness. So looking ahead, he said that it looks like we could see continued strength in the hog market. What did Dennis Smith say about live cattle? With the exception of the bull June-August spreads, both live cattle and feeder cattle finished on a strong note today. We're watching the Jan for a close over $127. There was no cash trade on Friday that Dennis was aware of, and the weekly kill came in at 608,000, down slightly from a week ago, but up 3% from last year. And then he concludes with this thought: my perception is that wholesale beef has paused and not topped. The choice was down 7 cents at $247.14 a hundredweight, with the select down 24 cents at $221.42. So that's what we're looking at. And then one other point that he made that I was not aware of, the Chinese story. He said the trade, in my opinion, is grossly underestimating the potential bullish impact of this story. One reason might be that when we lost the Chinese market in late 2003, the U.S. had only shipped 8,400 tons of beef to China. However, Chinese imports over the last 14 years have increased by 4,500%. And last year, the Chinese imported 600,000 tons of beef. So we're already shipping beef over there, but with the new agreement, it looks like we could ship a lot more. Well, that's our time for this week. Thank you for joining us. Max Armstrong and I'm Orion Samuelson. We appreciate your company every week on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.